Blog Talk Radio.
All I'm thinking of, baby, see, honestly, you're the one that makes my life complete. You're the only one for me. You're all I'm dreaming of, baby, can't you see that? You and me, together for eternity. In my vision, you are all I see. I think I'm in love, yeah.
All right, everyone, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am, of course, Angela Butler. Today's show is going to be brief. I'm here to talk about the 64,000 missing women in America, which are basically all black. But the worst part about them missing is that they have never been found. And this is tragic. That's a lot of women to go missing or being raped. Basically, what I'm trying to say is these women have not been found, and there's something wrong. Nobody's really covering it except black news media, such as News1.com, News1.com. I'm looking at that now. And the other things I've got for different sources. What I want to know is why aren't black women, Mexicans, receiving the same type of publicity for being missing that other races of people? As a black woman, I feel like I'm just as important and just as good as any other race of people. My life counts. My life means something. And unfortunately, the state, according to this, the state that black women disappear the most is in New York, Georgia, North Carolina, Maryland, and Florida. So why is this? Why is this? As a community, need to come together as a community of people. If black people do not learn to come together as a community, an entire community, then I don't believe the black race is going to completely survive. I mean, I know we have more millionaires and billionaires than any time in history. There are more college graduates, university graduates of black females than there ever has been in the history. Black people spending billions of dollars here in the United States of America. It makes no sense. There are so many millionaires and billionaires that use their platforms, their powers, help other, help black people in general. What's scary is it's just not coming out. I put it this way, it's just not coming to my attention about the 64,000 women. That's the question. You know, if you think about it, there's sex slavery, there's murder, there's kidnapping, there's serial killers, you know, all that's real scary. All that is really scary, but for those of us who have faith, and I'm sure most people do have faith. I have faith in God. Some people have faith in Allah. No one's covering this. No one's trying to talk about this on the different major television networks. There needs to be more media attention on this because they need to be found. These women need to be found. So, according to my research, in 2010, as of December 2010, there was a total of 173,985 minorities reported missing in the United States out of 692,944 call races. Now, that's scary. That's scary. There are so many things circulating and saying crazy stuff that I didn't even know could happen. Body parts missing. People ended up dead with the body part missing. There was a young man in Georgia who they said got hung up in a net. He was an athlete. And his parents wanted an autopsy did. And when the autopsy was dead, there were organs missing from inside his body. I know most of you thought this is just crazy. But we're also being gunned down. Gunned down in the streets like our black women are. They sent me something earlier. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, I'm hoping to have the lady on my show Monday, if possible. But I'm going to go ahead and talk about it just in case she is not able to call in. Her name is Miss Lau. That's what I'm going to call her. She has a name. She's a person. She's loved. She's missed. Now just give me 1 second, everyone. I will find it. This young lady was 30 years old. She was 30 years old. I think it's obvious she's dead. She's killed by police on Miss Lyle. And the person who sent me this is Paulotta Clark. The organization is the Color of Change. .org, .com. Ms. Paulotta Clark sent the National Coordinator of Judicial Violence Symbolism. She's in New York, New York. She sent me this email, judicialviolencesymbolism@gmail.com. What's going on? I mean, the police killed her, and she's pregnant. She was pregnant. She was pregnant. And according to this, not only she had been arrested like 2 weeks before that, for domestic violence. Her boyfriend and her was abusing her, and it's clear to see that she is a victim of domestic violence. She was in a transitional a transitional home. The police knew this. The reason she had a mental illness, they don't say what the mental illness is, but she also had four other children. This is horrible. What the police are doing. We all knew there were black women just as well as men being killed. We chose not to talk about it. When I say we, I mean the media in general. But black people in general, Ms. Lyles is, and she's only third. The police, according to what I'm reading here, the police knew that she was mentally ill. She was mentally ill and suffering from mental illness because of domestic violence. And she was in a transitional home. She had four of the kids. She called the police because someone had broken into the home and stole some things from her. It doesn't say what was stolen, but she did call the police. The police are supposed to be trained. They're supposed to be trained in hurting people, not to hurt people, especially mentally ill. But mentally ill people, it's horrible. They're getting gunned down to the mentally ill. It's not just one person. Her name is Charlene Lyles. She's a 30-year-old pregnant mother of four. She was struggling with mental health. She called 911 to report a burglary. It says in the email that they sent me, instead of assistance, she was sentenced to death. It says the police gunned her down with very minimal to no de-escalation. The email goes on to say she was staying in a transitional housing facility for homeless families in Seattle, and someone robbed her home. She needed help. But two officers arrived at Charlene's home, and despite knowing she was advised for mental health counseling due to domestic violence, they reached for guns first when they saw her holding a knife. Instead of de-escalating, they chose to shoot and kill her right in front of her children. This came from Ms. Paulina Lido Lafayette, and she, like I said, she's the judicial violence witness, and she forwarded this to me also because it came from the info at Color of Change. So Color of Change, the sad part about this is she was murdered 2 days after Philando Castile's killer walked free. And the cousin here is, how she said, my cousin, a pregnant black mother, was gunned down in Seattle after she called 911 for help. She also says we need to share her name, Charlene Lyles. Also, she goes on to say that they chose not to de-escalate. Even though they know they're supposed to be well-trained on how to de-escalate mental health situations, they choose to kill. Now they're on paid leave. It's obvious. These police officers should be fired immediately and indicted on criminal charges. And that's just the start. We need full transparency in this investigation. The police should release all footage, not just audio recordings. And this is from, like I said, Ms. Paul Clark. She was murdered in front of her children, all four of them, and she was also pregnant. Picnic. World America that we live in. And also, it goes on to say, sign the petition, Justice for Charlene Lyles, and colorofchange.org is a website you all can go to find more information. At every single turn, the Seattle police failed. This email, they go on to say, first, a couple of weeks before her death, they arrested Charlene when she called for help with an abusive boyfriend. She spent 9 days in jail because she was a survivor of domestic violence and struggling with mental health. Seattle police knew she needed help, not guns. It goes on to say they even had it marked in their system. But when she was robbed, and called the police again. Instead of sending a mental health practitioner to her home, they sent more police officers than they normally would. The email goes on to say, on an audio recording, you can hear the two officers discussing her on their way to Charlena's home. They knew she was struggling with mental health. They had other means. After less than 11 minutes, they reached for their guns. There is no reason for Charlena to die, yet the Seattle police officers did not follow any training and policies set forth by the Seattle Police Department. The Seattle Police Department has a long and dangerous history of mistreatment of people with mental health issues. They were under investigation by the Obama administration and the Department of Justice in 2012 for its ongoing patterns of officers using excessive force. It goes on to say, right after the investigation, the Seattle Police Department was placed on the federal consent decree, which allows the police department to be sued for civil rights violations and use of excessive force. It goes on to say, too often people with mental health issues become vulnerable targets of police, despite police departments being required to have a clear protocol for engaging with them. According to one study in 2015, about 25% of people who were killed by police suffered for mental health issues. Just less than 2 weeks ago, a black man diagnosed with bipolar disorder, his name is Joshua Bear, was shot by police in Tulsa, Oklahoma, leaving his family in turmoil with unanswered questions. It is the same unanswered questions our family now has to deal with to be black and dealing with mental health means becoming an even deadlier target for police violence, and it has to stop. This is the email. There's much more to it. I'm going to read a little more. Black women and girls remain under high threat of police violence, and I believe this and know it to be true. Demand the Seattle Police Department to fire their two officers. Yes, I have relatives who they made look like they were the monsters, female, black female women, who are made to look like monsters for defending themselves. The black women, those on the staff, it's such an extreme violence in white supremacist climate that goes beyond any White House administration. Black women continue to be viewed as a threat in this country. The vicious stereotypes of black women being out of control, angry, and aggressive have led to the death of two men, just like my cousin. Women like Sandra Bland, Tanisha Anderson, and Mariam Carey were deemed threatening by men who were twice their size and had guns just because they were vocal. Time and time again, black women are either forced into silence and invisibility or put in harm's way. In the media, politics and our personal lives, from public leadership, like we've seen with Congresswoman Maxine Waters. This is all from the email that Ms. Paulette Clark has sent me. Like I said, she is the she's over the judicial violence symbolism. Her name is Talia Lidia Lafayette Court, and this is from Nakia Isabel. She is the cousin of Charlena Lyles by a Color of Change, which is colorofchange.org. If you want to contact them, it's info@colorofchange.org. They also have a website called colorof.org. And like I said earlier, she was staying in a transitional home. About using abuse against excessive force with people who have mental health and substance abuse issues. Right after the investigation, the Seattle Police Department, which allows police departments to issue civil rights violations and use of excessive force, I believe I read that. But I was also talking about Dr. Barr, who was shot and killed by police in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which at one time, many years ago, it was called Black Wall Street there in Tulsa, in a part of Tulsa, Oklahoma. There were a lot of successful black people with their own businesses, but they were massacred. It says even his family in turmoil with unanswered questions. It is the unanswered questions our family now has to deal with. To be black and dealing with mental health, becoming an even deadlier target for police violence. Yes, I read that twice deliberately. There she goes on to talk about black women being viewed as a threat, that they're seen as threatening by men with twice their size that have guns. Because they're loud, they don't open their mouths. And that's what I'm saying. This is not what email says. Then it goes on to say, time and time again, black women as a force into silence and invisibility are put in harm's way. Yes, I read that again. In the media, politics, and our personal lives, from public leadership, Black Senator Congresswoman Maxine Waters and U.S. Senator Kamala Harris, black women are constantly attacked and vilified after being bolstered and steadfast in their crusade. You can go, it's public, this is public. You can go and read it yourselves at colorofchange.org. She talks about Congresswoman Maxine Waters and U.S. Senator Kamala Harris, and they're saying they're constantly under attack and vilified and boisterous and steadfast in their crusade for justice and taking a stand. She goes on to say that, but even in mundane, everyday action of being a mother, protecting one's family, driving home, going to school, sitting in a living room of a home, black women and girls are deemed a threat facing the ultimate consequence. Yeah. And it goes on to the officer's actions who killed Charlene Lyles cannot be justified. The Seattle Police Department must hold these officers accountable. And they're asking for justice. They have a GoFundMe page. They're asking for donations to their GoFundMe page. She gives links about the colorofchange.org. Another one for the colorofchange.org is well documented. This isn't very much public knowledge. Like I said, I was sent this email and it's sickening. 64,000 black women missing, black people being killed. It's awful. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I've just been listening to you. I am well.
Okay, how are you doing? Pastor Ernestine, is this you?
Yes, I've been on the line for about 20 minutes. I just was listening. I was enjoying it, so I didn't know if I was supposed to say something or just wait.
No, ma'am, you have not called in, so I have been on and started talking about the murder.
Yeah, yeah.
Murder of the young lady, 30-year-old young lady, Colleen Lau. How are you doing today?
Everything is well. I was listening. It was sounding wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. It may have sounded, there wasn't something wonderful to talk about. So how are you doing? Are you doing all right, Pastor?
I'm well. I am well. I am alive and blessed.
Okay. So let's talk about you. I apologize for going on so long. I did not see your number. Forgive me for that. If we have to do another one, we will. This is okay with you, but we're going to care. I still have 20 minutes. So
okay.
All right, everyone. This is Pastor Ernestine. Please pronounce your last name.
Terrell.
All right. And you're in New York. You are a pastor, a woman of God,
yes,
a mother, an author, domestic violence survivor. You've also wrote a book, you like to talk about your book and why you wrote your book?
Yes. Hi, everyone. I am a domestic violence survivor, and I wrote a book about what I believe the Lord wanted other people to hear about. I was married, got married very young, right out of high school, the love of my life, so I thought. 3 months after the marriage, the abuse started. It started with just little slaps or push or shoving, and it escalated into the physical beating, even being cut several times, ribs being broken, just black eyes, everything that you can imagine, to the point where my life was in danger. I wrote the book because I believe God allowed me to survive those almost 8 years, not just for me, but for other women that know that there's an escape. There's always an escape, even though the door is open for us. A lot of times we don't walk through it, but I would never want another woman, man, boy, or girl to go through what I went through. So the book is a true story, and I just finished writing the second one that I'm praying that gets to a publisher really quick. But it is a true story. It's called Life After Death. And the Lord gave me the title because he himself, the Holy Spirit, said that I was in death while I was in that marriage and in the abuse, but he allowed me to live. So now I'm living my life after death. And it's an awesome book because it tells about survival. It don't just talk about the darkness of it. It talks about the light. So I'm excited to know that you can get out. You can get out.
Okay.
So I do a lot of conferences, workshops, deliverance services, traveling back and forth to the South now for the last 3 years. The Lord has me traveling back to Mississippi. That's where it happened at. And yes. Georgia, and I'm excited.
You're a survivor. You survived domestic violence.
I'm a survivor.
You're alive. Yes.
Yes.
And God bless you. I know in your introduction, you talk a little in your introduction, you said, where do I begin? At the beginning, I suppose, birth, the birth of life given unto by my Heavenly Father. She said, in you're also going to say further on into the introduction that hopefully this book will help those who need to know there's a way out of every situation you might be in. So that part, the type of things you went through is horrible. I've been in domestic violence situations. And how many times were you cut, ma'am? Did you hurt your children also?
Yes. Yes, he did. I was cut twice on the arm. One of them was so severe that the doctor, the surgeon, said that if it would have been even, he couldn't even say how close to it was to the main vein that I would have bled to death. But in that attack, I had the baby, the youngest daughter, in my arm, and he cut her too. He split her knee wide open with the knife. So most of the time, majority of the time, the abuse was just toward me. But that particular night, he, you know, said out of his mouth that he was going to kill me and the children. So I believe he was going to do it. And it was only God. I mean, there was just no other explanation but God that saved us.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, I believe that. I believe that very much so. You're a living testimony that you can make it out, that there's life after death, that you named your book.
Yes, yes. So, I take this book everywhere I go.
So you're going to be in Alabama, am I correct? Mobile, Alabama, for public speaking?
I'm going to be in Bucatana. It's about probably an hour from Mobile. I fly into Mobile, Alabama, but the church itself is located in a little town called Bucatana, Mississippi. That's July 17th. I believe it started at 7:30. I'm going to be there for a conference. This woman of God wants to get the word out about surviving, and so I'm going to bring some books. I'm going to tell the testimony, and I'm just going to be there to answer any questions and even to, you know, give advice as the Lord leads me to any woman that might be in that particular situation. The main thing is being able to talk. You know, that's the first thing. And then we that have survived have to be there. Has to be. We have to be an avenue for others. They have to know that to get out, there is help. Because that was the one thing for me, and this was years ago, was I didn't know where to go. There was nowhere to go. So now there's a lot of places that we can go, and we need to make those places and those exits available to the women, because it has to stop. You know, it has to stop. We have to be, our sister's keeper.
Yes, ma'am. You are correct. Pastor Perel, you are 100% correct. I agree with everything you say. So you married, straight? You married your, I assume, your high school sweetheart.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Yes, ma'am.
I did.
So,
I married my high school sweetheart.
Okay. What I was going to say, Pastor Perel, is that a lot of women are not fornicators or adulterers. They do it the godly way, married before God. They do it the way the Bible says. But yet women, like you married, did it God's way, did it the right way, horrible things happen. There, you know, a lot of women believe, the women that I've talked to over the years of this show, because it's going into its 8th year, have had relatives or mother who were abused, and they would see the abuse. What I'm trying to say is the church, not condemning the church, but some churches that have pastors, I'm going to say, men pastors, tell the women to stay there and pray for their husbands. Because they say the only reason you should leave your wife is because of adultery. I do not agree with that. I will never agree with that. And I believe that you should try not to be killed.
Right.
Do you agree? I know it's logical for me to say this. It's not something that's unusual. But there are still preachers telling women to stay, and they end up dead. Some years back, I had a friend. She knew him about an hour and a half, and we became fast friends. She was a little older than me. And I didn't see the signs. I did not see them. And to this day, I've always regretted that her husband was somebody. He had seen his brain, you know. He felt people were listening to his brain.
Right.
And I looked at her. She just shrugged her shoulders. She said, he gets like that. So we had been friends for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, I'm told, I went 2 or 3 days without calling, and she hadn't called me. I found out that she was dead. Her husband, her daughter, and then killed herself. So when it was on TV, it was called double murder, suicide. That hurt. I missed it. I didn't see it. And I'll carry this to my grave, to be honest with you. I wish there was something I could have seen. I did, but I didn't see it coming.
Right.
When he said that about believing that he had someone listening in his brain recording him, that was a strong clue. But I didn't do anything.
Right.
And I'll always regret that. And she said, and so is her daughter. And she said also, she said, I think he'll.
And that happened. and that happens a lot. One thing I can say that holds true is that if a man says that, if he says it, now if you hear him say that he's going to kill you, 99.9% of the time he means it. It is not a joke. And another thing that I've learned over the years is that if they ever hit you or beat you, and then they say they're sorry and they're not going to ever do it again, trust me, they're going to do it again. That's something that once it's instilled in them, they would need to get help to stop it. They cannot stop it themselves. It's like an addiction to have that dominant force over you, and knowing that they prevail over you in strength and size. You know, a woman was not created by God to be equal to a man or to overpower him. He was created, you know, to really be the head of the house. So I can say that the one question that's always asked to me is, why did you stay? At the time, I was young. I was naive. I believe in the old-fashioned way that once you got married, that's who you're supposed to be with, to death do you part. Then it turned into fear. It turned into, I was so afraid that this man was going to kill me and my children. I didn't think there was a place to hide. I didn't think that the state of Mississippi was big enough to hide me, because he made me very fearful. He made me believe that he could find me no matter where I go, that nobody could protect me. He just had this embedded in me that he was the master and I was the slave. And if I wanted to live, if I really wanted to live, I needed to do what he said, when he said it, and how he said it. And that did not break off me. It was prayer that kept me, because some of the abuse, it would take three shows for me to tell you some of the abuse, not even in the book, some of the abuse that happened to me, I should not be alive. The physical abuse that my body took, I should not be alive. Having health problems, even from those beatings, that's been years ago. My doctor recently told me of some things that are happening to me, and they're the result. So the beatings that I took, we're talking beatings, not a fight and it's over. We're talking about this man beat me until he was sweating, until he needed to stop because he was tired. So I was afraid. I knew that what I was receiving from this man, he was threatening my family. You know, he was saying if I leave, he would kill one of them and I would live with that. So there was such a force of control that I was afraid. And it took that one night when he cut my daughter. When I saw the blood shooting from her leg, it was as if I woke up. I began to fight like I've never fought before. My arm was cut wide open, but I knew that it was life or death. And somehow something in me just woke up, and I knew I wanted to live. I wanted to live. And that's really all I can say, because it just gets so deep.
Yes, ma'am. I can hear it in your voice. I can hear it in your voice.
You got to want to live. You got to want it so bad that even the fear just don't matter anymore. Yes. And I want women to know all over the world, not just in the United States. I want the women, we need to know that God created us to live. No one should ever have that right to take another person's life, whether it's domestic violence. Because I work here in New York with Stop the Violence. No one, I believe, has that right to take anyone's life, but definitely not someone that says they love you. And that's what hurt me. Even years later, in my later years, I sit back and I think about how this man said that he loved me and would take care of me, and this, out of the same mouth, he cursed me and called me everything but a child of God. And so that really hurt to know that someone that was supposed to love and take care of me was beating me and wanted to kill
That's
me.
That's not love. That's not love.
Nope.
That's
nope.
not love.
And a lot of women think it is. They think if a man hit and beat them, he loves them. But that's why I thank God for you, your program, your radio station, because I believe that it will get the word out. We just need more people to really cry loud that we as women, we got to stand strong. We got to stand tall. And we have to live. We have to want to live.
Yes, ma'am. You are correct. And I apologize, Ms. Ernestine, in about 2 or 3 minutes, the program's going to end. I'm going to have you back.
Okay.
I apologize.
All right.
You're a little late calling in. And I'm a little late calling in. So I started to talk about the 64,000 black women, how the media is not covering them. They haven't been found.
All
yet.
Right. So. Yes. Anytime you need me.
Yes, ma'am. So I just want to say, everyone, bring back our girls. It's not just in Africa. Well, it wasn't just overseas. Bring our girls back. It's also including the 64,000 missing black females in America that have not been found. And that's the worst part about it. Just going to say, I am going to have you back. I will be calling you this weekend. I know you all want to hear what she has to say, more of what she has to say. And I wish you success with your book, Pastor Ernestine Terrell. I wish you God's
Thank
peace
you.
And God's blessings.
To you too, yes. Woman of God. We will talk soon.
Yes, ma'am. You
All right, bye-bye.
Back on the show. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Right,
Thank
everyone.
You. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You just got to just listen to Pastor Ernestine Terrell. She said, you know you have to want to live, that women were created to live. Just like men. We're created to live also. We weren't put here to be killed. And I agree with everything Pastor Ernestine Terrell says. And I believe her book. Are you still on the phone?
Yes, I'm still here.
Your book
I'm
going to
be here till
death.
You cut off.
Okay,
yes.
Life After Death, right? Life After Death?
Yes.
Is your book? Where can people go to buy
it's
your book?
They can... It would be easier to get to come through me. I'm on Facebook. You can find me Facebook, the very name of Ernestine Terrell. It's easier to just get in touch with me, and I can send them one. A lot of people have been having a lot of problems getting them offline. So just Facebook me, Ernestine Terrell, and I will get a book to you.
All right, thank you. Everyone, you heard that. Facebook of Ernestine Terrell. Thank you, woman of God. Pastor Terrell, you have a blessed day.
Thank you. You too. God bless.
God bless you.